Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Today is Thursday. It is May 17th, 2018. It's 11:14 in the morning, and I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record here at the downtown Chicago studios in the Tribune Tower of WGN Radio. Don't get to say Tribune Tower much longer for our address. You can hear me weekdays on WGN Radio from 1 to 3, and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, and I just walked all over Steve Bertram, didn't I?
No, that people have been doing that for 33 years now, so that's okay. I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host Pretty Late on the Patty V Show, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Friday.
Eric Zorn normally joins us. He can't. He'll be listening to and criticizing this podcast.
I was just saying, yet we can feel his presence.
On his own. And Kristen McQuarrie will join us on another podcast, too.
By the way, congratulations to all of you for your award-winning... Oh, sorry, was I not supposed to say that yet?
No,
if you wanted to start with something else, I thought I'd throw on a different topic.
Yeah, no, kidding. Eric always sort of interjects before we even get rolling. And thank you. Yeah, the Mincing Rascals, the award-winning Mincing Rascals, won a Listsigor Award by the Chicago Headliners Club. It's an organization that recognizes great journalism, and this podcast
and
was
us
awarded the best podcast from Chicago.
Congratulations.
By the way, you might have made the cut, too. We turned in a year's worth of work or highlights from a year's worth, and you may have been in one of those highlight reels.
You get some of that sweet, sweet Listsigor money.
Okay, enough about us.
I expect to have a lovely dinner with all of you.
Into the greatest witch hunt this country has ever seen, according to Donald Trump. The president seems, and by the way, today is the one-year anniversary of the Mueller investigation.
I didn't get you anything.
The president calls the greatest witch hunt ever.
Great, does he mean like spectacular? Or because there were people that were actually killed.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Aren't we forgetting the actual witch hunts that took place in the 1690s in Salem, Massachusetts?
Are you saying it's too soon?
Aren't
too
we forgetting?
Soon. Yes.
I know, because nobody's been burned at the stake yet.
No.
It's cost $10 million. That's not even a lot of money.
The fact is that this has been historically short for other special prosecutors' investigations. I mean, Whitewater went on for 4 years or so. The Scooter Libby investigation goes on. So if you look at the length of time, this doesn't even register yet. Not only that, it has been incredibly fruitful.
Yes.
It's not as if there hasn't been results here. 13 Russians indicted, several Trump aides pleading guilty. So the Big Mo is on Big Mueller's side here.
Well, Hillary was investigated by more committees for a longer period of time over Benghazi.
And how many indictments?
That's apples and oranges, because that's congressional political committee. As far as criminal investigations by the FBI or special prosecutor or whomever, even by that standard, the Trump investigation so far is a shorty.
And what I find the most galling of all of the stories are surrounding the Mueller investigation is no one knows anything, but we all have an opinion.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
What do you mean no one knows anything?
We don't know where the investigation is going. We can assume. We can tell by the indictments. We can tell by the grand jury.
I know that none of us knows what Mueller knows.
Well, especially the Republicans, especially this White
House. So what is your point about that?
I'm saying that can we just be patient? Can we just wait for the report? Please? The White House is trying to gin it up because they know who and what they are, so they know what's in the mail.
They do know the answers.
But,
yes.
You know, I'm looking at it from the other side, Scott. Everyone's writing their own story. They think Mueller's going to come out with this incredibly damning story. And look at the Michael Cohen situation. People are already talking about how much jail time he's facing.
Right.
He's not even been charged. Let alone convicted of something, he's not even been charged with anything, and people are talking about the decades he's facing in prison.
Well, and the thing about, you know, should we wait until it's all over? There have been 17 criminal indictments on this, and how many were there during the Obama administration? How many were there during, there were a few actually during George W. Bush's. I have the list of all the indictments.
No kidding. What is the number?
There were 16 under George W. Bush with 16 convictions and 9 prison sentences. Under Clinton, there were 2 with 1 criminal conviction and 1 prison. So they have the whole list, although under Nixon there were 76 indictments.
Do you have Obama in there? Right.
Obama had zero criminal indictments and zero convictions.
And so where are we on Trump right now?
There are 17 indictments and 5 convictions. And the sentence is pending.
What
Well, we're almost 2 years in.
I don't know how set...
exactly.
No. Is and it 2 years?
Not almost.
Almost,
it's over
yeah.
a year over and a half, really.
We...
Yeah. Not even a year and
Michael
a half.
Michael Cohen going to jail does not satisfy a lot of people. You didn't know who Michael Cohen was 2 months ago, right? So if he goes to jail or doesn't go to jail, did he break a campaign finance law or some other law? I don't know. I don't care that much. If it comes back around to the president in some manner, I guess I care. But I don't think you can indict a sitting president anyway on criminal charges.
Well, and
and he's not going to be impeached for this. He's not going to be impeached for this.
Well, so, there's a school of thought. There are some who argue you can indict and try a sitting president. I think there's Justice Department guidelines I've heard people say that say that you can't. But then I heard Senator Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, today say, well, you can still indict and defer the trial.
Right.
So that might be...
That also won't scratch the itch that people have. I mean, at the end of the day, the end game is you want Donald Trump out of office if you are salivating over the Mueller investigation. Cohen won't get that done. Even a criminal indictment of the president won't get it done during his term.
If it moved toward impeachment, it would happen.
It would have to be tried in the House.
And I don't think that's going to happen.
But the Republicans don't want to impeach him. They like what they're getting done. They're all behind him. They aren't distancing themselves for the most part.
The president keeps saying that there's no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. That's something he doesn't get to say. It would be as if maybe Patty robbed a bank, and Patty every day on Twitter said, I didn't rob the bank, I didn't rob the bank, as though that should make the police investigation of the robbery go away.
Well, but if she didn't rob the bank, she gets to say it. So if the president didn't collude, he gets to say there was no collusion. We might know what the president said to his son, Don Jr., except Don Jr. apparently said to the Senate investigators that he never talked to his father about the Russia investigation, which is like,
I'm sorry.
I mean, well, come on.
Well, it doesn't seem like anything matters. It doesn't matter what he says. And here, just what, a little over a month ago, he said he knew nothing about Stormy Daniels, that there was no payment. You have to talk right. to Michael Cohen. And then now we find out yesterday with the records that were released.
On page 45.
that he did, in fact, make that payment.
Okay.
But, you know, that was the flimsiest. I mean, I know the fact that we all dismiss it because it doesn't have the ring of truth doesn't mean that we're right. But, boy, was that a thin thing that Cohen said. I took a mortgage out on my house to pay $130,000 in hush money to an adult film star for a relationship that did not happen, and I didn't tell the president, because this is the sort of thing that
I'm a fixer.
Friends and fixers do, and it didn't rise to the level of me having to tell the president about it. None of that makes any sense, right? And so now the bubble seems to be burst on that.
And it won't matter. Patty's
it doesn't
absolutely
matter.
Right. They don't care.
It doesn't matter.
His core supporters at 35-40% don't care.
And his numbers are eking up a little bit.
A little bit.
But that's Rasmussen, which, by the way,
I didn't know it was Rasmussen. I just saw.
Yeah, the rest
Rasmussen doesn't really count, but it does. I mean, it's a thing, but it's consistently the most favorable to the president.
Yes, and Republicans and conservatives.
And they're unwavering.
One of the reasons his poll numbers might be going up, and God, I hope he's successful, is the talks with North Korea.
Right.
And, you know, that's gone. That seems to have blown up.
Yeah.
And we've moved on to the next. Right. I agree with you. Maybe. Scott, until now, been way too easy.
Yeah.
Right. So
it's been. Suspiciously isn't the right word, because I hope it works. It'd be great if he can be a player on this. But
we shouldn't expect them just to roll over the way it looked like they
looked
were
going
like
to roll over.
If they're saying now that if denuclearization is on the table, they're not going to play. I mean, that was. And by the way, how do you tell a country that they can't have nuclear weapons when everybody around them does, and we do included?
We have carrots, and so we offer them aid. We give them incentives to get rid of it.
I don't think they care.
There's a great, terrific columnist down in Chicago, down in Australia, who writes about this stuff a lot. She's a very progressive writer, but just brilliant. And she talks about I just lost my train of thought. We're talking about and how every other country that has gotten rid of its nuclear program, we kill them.
Right.
Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, once they say, okay, especially Gaddafi, we're play ball. I'm getting rid of the nuclear program. You guys can come in and score. And then a year later, we blow them up.
That's why I'm saying if they're a poor country and they're starving, they just assume they would rather be it. They would rather decimate their population than accept aid or get rid of their nuclear weapons.
Yeah. By the way, before we leave Trump land, we often wonder, does it matter or not? I think the Stormy Daniels story still orbits around that question. And by the way, can we just call her Stormy Daniels, or what's her real name? She's got a real name.
Linda.
It's more fun to say Stormy.
Right. She'll be in town, by the way,
Stephanie
in June.
Clifford.
Is she going to be on the
Stephanie
show?
Stephanie Clifford?
Yes, I did see that.
She'll be at the Admiral.
Elif, we got to call the Admiral and see if we can get Stephanie Clifford
you know
on
what,
our
I'm,
show.
I'm usually there on the weekend. I'll stop by and see if I can.
No, we're driving by and Brenda goes, holy cow,
you're
Stormy
Daniels
Admiral? Is in town.
Yep. And my friend Nadine, who owns a Marie's Pizza on Lawrence Avenue, she's like, I was going to take that weekend off. We're going to be busy. So she's very excited about it.
Yeah, no kidding. do we always have to call her adult film star Stormy Daniels? Because I think that we know who she is.
Yes.
And I think the only reason we love to paint her that way every single time is because it's that much more embarrassing to the president.
Well, it makes the story that much more tawdry, I think, and so I think it's relevant. Yeah.
I don't. Well, that's it exactly, Steve. It just makes it more tawdry. It doesn't add any understanding of the facts to the story.
Oh, I don't know. I think that thinking about this, I've been thinking about it a lot because you've mentioned this before. It's the delineation of someone like that. I mean, Monica Lewinsky was always intern Monica Lewinsky. It was during the scandals.
I think that was relevant.
70s.
But that gave you her age.
I think that it's part of the context.
Monica was an intern, which means there was a power issue and there was an age issue. Stormy Daniels is an adult, and whatever she doesn't change the fact.
She's a sex star, and the president's in trouble for having sex with a sex star.
The president's in trouble for having sex, maybe, and paying somebody for it, or paying somebody to not talk about it, or not having sex with somebody and paying somebody to not talk about it.
I think there's added value that we can all find her.
You are right about that, yeah. But I think the value is not in understanding the story. Okay, we'll leave that.
Are you going to do the Trump hotel expenses, or are you moving on?
I can do the Trump hotel expenses.
It's just really bothered me lately.
Why? Yeah. I mean, boy, this is another one that's been out there
What's
for a while.
The number?
$40 million.
So the Trump Hotel in Washington has made $40 million off of government spending, or how does that?
I think it's overall, but a lot of it's government spending.
I mean, I just think this is a perfect example of one of those things that there's so much that we don't pay any attention to.
Yeah.
I mean, had George Bush built a hotel in Crawford, Texas, and then charged the government for government people to stay there or guests?
The Obamas put up a resort in Honolulu,
sure.
And everybody goes there, including them.
I mean, it's just not acceptable. And I think there are other hotels in Washington, D.C.
That's my understanding.
I mean, there's a few of them. One right by the water. I think that didn't we all expect he was to divest himself of his and he hasn't. He hasn't
no,
separated.
No, he never said divest.
You said
he
expected.
Said
I did not expect him.
Yeah, he said he wouldn't be involved in the day to day or whatever.
Operations.
But
yeah.
I don't know if was he involved with that the half a billion Chinese government payoff.
Okay, so there's ZTE, which is a Chinese phone company, and the president, as you know, is trying to make China great again. So he said, listen,
happening?
They're losing too many jobs. The United States is no longer doing business with this Chinese phone company. And it appears as though sort of a pretense to the negotiations with the Chinese. What's the matter, Steve?
Well, but the U.S. sanctioned and stopped working with this phone company because it was a danger to the U.S. that they were implanting things in their phones and, you know, tracking. They could track soldiers and things like that. Soldiers can't have these phones. So it's a national security thing.
Right.
Go.
Okay. So I'm just reading from Snopes, which is an interesting way to read about anything that comes out of the White House. 2 days before the United States President Donald Trump took the unusual step, May 13th, of announcing plans to help save those jobs in China, reports surfaced that the Chinese government would back a development in Indonesia featuring Trump-branded properties to the tune of $500 million.
I mean, it's just jaw-dropping. Any one of these things we've talked about right now would be crippling to any other presidency.
There's no outrage. There's absolute because, again, people feel like they're getting what they wanted. And this was part of the package, I guess.
I'll scratch your back and you'll scratch mine to the tune of $500 million. Mm-hmm. You guys, at a restaurant in New York.
There's some good ones.
An irate customer criticized.
Not that. I know it's coming.
An irate customer criticized the staff for speaking Spanish.
Your staff is speaking Spanish to customers when they should be speaking.
Being very violent. I mean, sometimes they do.
He spoke it. She's speaking it. It's America. I will be following up. And my guess is they're not documented. So my next call is to ICE to have each one of them kicked out of my country. If they have the balls to come here and live off of my money, I pay for their welfare. I pay for their ability to be here.
I think this is the rule restaurants should abide by. If they can, employees should speak to the customer in the language the customer is most comfortable with. To each other, employees should speak English when they are in an area where customers can hear. Evidently, they weren't, and a video has surfaced of this guy screaming at the staff.
I was going to say, criticize seems like a way softer whip.
Did you say that's your opinion that people should? So the wait staff, if they are both.
If I'm standing there ordering something from you.
And they're both French speakers.
If that's interesting.
They're speaking to each other.
If this is a Chinese restaurant, would this guy have blown up on a couple of Chinese staff members speaking Chinese?
Oh, probably. Maybe. There's more video of him yelling at people in different situations.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh,
he's
yeah.
a serial ranter?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, but what's your point?
Well, I'm just saying, is that your issue that you, John Williams, think that staffers should speak English?
Have you ever
in
been
presence?
In a restaurant? Listen, I'm no friend of this guy. He's a bad guy, and I'm not supporting him. But have you ever been in. Oh, God, Patty, stop smiling at me. Have you ever been in a restaurant and they are talking and laughing about something in front of you and you don't know what they're talking and laughing about and it makes you a little insecure?
Well, then that's right there. You're feeling insecure and self-conscious. And this happens a lot in nail salons because most of the people working there speak a language I don't understand.
Right.
And I've had someone hold my foot up to another employee and they're laughing about my foot and I'm like, I don't know what they said.
I would have an issue with that. Maybe,
I was just like, okay, whatever. I mean, I don't... I don't care. Maybe because I grew up in a bilingual house, and I don't know. I never understood why people can't stand the sound of other people of a language they don't understand or seeing something in other languages. It just bothers them. And it's partly because we're insecure that we can't speak any other language. We are a monolithic country where we expect everyone to speak English. I've gotten so many phone calls from listeners who were like, "We need to make English the national language," and that was part of why people voted for Trump. They wanted things like that.
Speak American.
Yeah, I grew up, like Patty, I grew up in a bilingual home. And so hearing someone speak a language other than English doesn't offend me at all. If I'm having a conversation with someone else and you're standing there, I mean, obviously, first of all, customer service, they shouldn't ignore you. But second, their conversation is not my damn business.
Well, it's deeper than this. Props to them. I can only speak one language too, right? And I always think, gee, you're smarter than me, at least in that you can converse in two languages. But I think the problem is not that. It's that this guy said, I'm paying welfare for you people. We're going to get ICE. We're going to throw you out of this country.
Which isn't how this works, by the way.
Yeah.
If you speak Spanish, you get to call ICE.
Yeah, or that they'll be removed right. for
they're speaking Spanish.
Spanish
here at the Fresh restaurant in
Manhattan. Wouldn't it be funny if ICE, you called it and it says, press one for Spanish. Press two.
You know what? I'm going to call ICE and see what happens. That may be the case.
I think you can speak any language you want. And I understand if you're serving someone and talking to someone else and excluding or making someone uncomfortable, you should be mindful of that. But my God.
Yeah.
I mean... I don't care.
It's none of your business what they think of you anyway.
I mean, right. It's so you shouldn't be eavesdropping on them.
Well, my rule for restaurants would be if I was a manager and I wanted to have a bunch of happy customers, I think as a courtesy, you should speak English around English-speaking customers in an American restaurant.
So if there's a table of Spaniards at in your restaurant, should you start speaking the Spanish that you know?
Let's review the rules. There are two of them. If they can, employees should speak to the customer in the language the customer is most familiar with.
Okay, so you would speak Spanish to them.
But I wouldn't because I can't.
Right,
but if I could, I would.
Okay, but rule two
is to each other... Employees should speak English when an area where customers can hear.
Okay, so the Spaniards would be out of luck in that case. That's that's the scenario I'm bringing up. So say that there's a group of Spanish-speaking people and the bus staff is busing their table and they are speaking English as they do that. If they have the ability, by your rule, would you have them speaking Spanish because it would make the customers more comfortable?
Right. I didn't imagine that you were going to bring in a table full of Spaniards at my restaurant where
no one expects the Spanish.
Actually from Barcelona, so I hope they have the accent.
And plus, when employees are talking to each other, if it's their native language, and there might be expediency to it, they're able to convey what they want more directly to get something
done. I get that. Really. If they're speaking broken English to each other.
Like that.
I was curious, John, because you've talked about this before in this age of when we shame each other by using a videotape and blasting somebody publicly. You know, this guy's law firm, it's down to one star on Yelp. There are people, like, constant calls to the Bar Association to have him disbarred.
I think he unemployed himself. You know, I better keep his license, but I think he
is his, you know, he's going to come home to his wife or his dog or whoever that guy comes home to. There's a guy that got up, shined his shoes, went to work one day, went and got lunch, came home a less employable, less valuable, hated man in America.
Maybe
it's amazing how quickly that can happen.
Maybe you could replace Rudy Giuliani.
As a Trump counsel or just as a...
That's a matter of time, right?
Well, the woman who called the police on the barbecue family is probably happy that there's somebody else being memed instead of her.
Oh, I love those memes, though.
Oh, my God,
they
are
so
good. Do the barbecue family story.
In Oakland, California, there was a family barbecuing, and a woman called the police to report that they were using charcoal in a non-charcoal area, which was against an ordinance but not against the law.
Was there a race issue involved?
Well, there was a black family. And here's the thing. You know, I've actually done a little bit of research on this woman. She's an environmentalist, and she was saying, even when she was yelling at the family, that it's carcinogens in the environment and charcoals, but, you know, we have to clean up afterwards. But the fact that it was, you know, it happened to be a black family. I don't know if it escalated because of that, but it was like the third call in a week where there was the student at Yale who was sleeping in the common area, and a white student called the cops on a black woman.
Philadelphia, yeah. At the Starbucks. There was even video that surfaced at about the same time of some black guys that were playing golf on a golf course and weren't playing very quickly, and the guys behind them didn't like the way they were playing. Nobody likes the way people are playing in front of them on a golf course. But it escalated to viral video and the cops showing up and them saying, we don't want you guys here. And it had racial overtones, even if it wasn't racial. It's hard to do.
How is we don't want you guys here not racial? I mean,
Because
look how far we have to go. Yeah.
Can I? This is something we talked a lot about on my show, is the frivolous and ridiculous phone calls that are made to the police department. Summoning first responders because you don't like that someone's barbecuing or that someone's sleeping in the dorm. This is absurd. There are several. If you see a fire, if you see a car accident, if you see someone being attacked, if someone has a medical emergency, those are the reasons that you call the police department. Not because there's someone weird sleeping in your dorm.
Or a foursome is playing slowly in front of you. I mean, I'm amazed how quickly the cops respond.
Well, they really
show up quickly on these things.
And they never know why they're being called.
Yeah.
You know, they have to go to a different situation every single time, and they never know when this is going to turn south, you know?
Well, I don't know where these incidences happened, but, you know, I live downtown. I was in the apartment one night and heard bam, 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 clearly gunshots. Cops took 2 hours to show up because no one had been shot. So, I mean,
what was it?
It was guns.
Did you call the cops?
Yeah. Well, we called the cops, and then we called downstairs. So there's been, you know, there's gunshots.
And they said, yeah, there was gunshots.
Yeah, sure was.
Hmm. Speaking of name calling, so Scott's interested in this topic, and I am too, Scott, but the more I looked into it, the less egregious I thought the president's comments were. He was meeting with some sheriff's deputies in California, and the president said that the... He used the word animals to describe immigrants, right?
We're taking people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals. And we're taking them out of the country at a level and at a rate that's never happened before. And because of the weak laws...
I can't wait for this to be less egregious. Go ahead.
I know where John's going
really
with this.
Really looking forward
to this. The sheriff who was describing her dilemma said, look, here's the problem. She said, we work with ICE agents. They're in our jail, at least at this one place in California. And it's a cooperative thing. They're all good people. So if we have somebody that's here illegally, they're able to discover that and deal with them appropriately. But we're getting mixed messages. The state of California is a sanctuary state. And so we have the set of laws that say you can't cooperate. What should we do? We need to help. And then the president said, yeah, because these people are animals. They're the worst kind of human beings.
Prior, just a few sentences before that, the sheriff and the president were talking about MS-13 members.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Right.
But
the modern-day Nazis, I mean, right? We use them for everything.
Okay, so what is your point, Scott? What is your problem with him calling these people animals?
Well, like I said, they're talking about the crimes, talking about the potential bad ones. But it comes back to a lot of them are rapists, a lot of them are murderers. Some, I suppose, are good. That's the one quote. And then to call them animals, I'm sorry, my faith, and my church, I'm a Catholic, and we pray every Sunday about how we have to, you know, accept the immigrant, have to accept the stranger, accept that. By dehumanizing someone so much in his mind, in his mind, they're animals.
Well, and he's done this from day one, from the moment he announced his candidacy, by saying that Mexico doesn't send the good people. They only send their racist drug dealers.
I can't wait to hear the evangelicals, who are really pissing me off, come out against this, because this is it's the most unchristian thing you can say about another human being.
It reminds me, Scott, and he does this a lot, and we all do it, I suppose, when you say something like everyone says, or many people are telling me, you know, it's a sort of a lazy way to make a point because you don't really support it. I think of back in the Reagan years when Ronald Reagan would talk about the welfare moms, and he would talk in generalities as if they. Mm-hmm. Here Donald Trump is talking about the animals, but not the specific cases of them.
He doesn't know them.
Well, that's my point. It's as if it's not that it's made up. There may well be cases to support his, but he's not aware of them. And you're just sort of fabricating these things to make an argument. And I agree with you. I don't think we should refer to any other human being as an animal.
When you dehumanize people, it makes it easier to take advantage of them or to to marginalize them and to get rid of them.
What do you think about the governor of Illinois wanting to bring back the death penalty?
I can't believe that this is something. I was yelling at my radio because I was listening to John Williams talk about this. But I was really surprised that we've gone back to there have been cases that have been overturned with people who were on death row. It turned out that they were not the perpetrator. So just even that alone, and I know he said in certain circumstances it's people who've killed police officers
or mass murderers. But that sort of presumes that if the crime is really bad, that we'll always get it right. In this country, in the last 2 years, we have averaged 3 criminal exonerations a week. Not for murderers, but 3 times a week, the county or states have had to say, we got it wrong, and they release a prisoner. Some of them have been held for decades.
And even if it's not in a situation where they're exonerated, maybe they are the perpetrator, maybe they are the person who killed a police officer or a serial killer, what do we accomplish by exterminating another life? When I was younger, I supported the death penalty, and I will be very honest, and I talk about this on my show. My brother was killed by somebody who ended up being executed, and it did nothing for my family. There is nothing. You don't say you're doing it for the families, and I'm sure that there were other families that felt relieved and other situations, but it did nothing for my family. Nothing has been made better.
Well, I think this is more Eric or Kristen's territory, but it seems to me that what this is not really about the idea that the death penalty is going to come back, but it was a political play by the governor.
Oh, right, yeah. It's manipulating people who support the death penalty, and that's the thing.
Governor was faced with signing or vetoing or a mandatory vetoing the gun licensing bill, right, dealer licensing bill. And so what he did was he threw in all of these other things that are positive for some, the bump stock ban, and then the death penalty as well, knowing that it almost certainly would never bear fruit. So then, you know, he's able to say,
I tried
and I did this, and the Democrats fought it. Now, Speaker Madigan said today that he's going to give the governor's ideas a full hearing. I think they're going to talk about it today in session and then have a hearing on it on Monday. We'll see. But that's what I thought this whole thing. This was one of those announcements that would never come to fruition.
It's red meat to the downstate Republicans. And the fact of the matter is his support down there is razor thin. They do not like this guy. And so he's trying to pander, and he's not very good at it.
He's not very good at it. I mean, when he signed House Bill 40 and expanded the access to abortion, I mean, if he wants to give red meat, that seems like he went in the wrong direction. I mean, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Boy, yeah, no kidding. By the way, so you know the museum in Springfield, the Lincoln Museum, that had all of these extraordinary artifacts? A lot of them they purchased, and the bill for that purchase is coming due. They had to borrow money. Now they don't have they're $9 million short. So they said, well, let's sell some of the items. And the items that they might be selling include the bloodied glove Lincoln wore the night to the theater, and his wife Mary's fan that she used at the theater that night, and a handwritten note between the two of them about their son. It's just some very personal, iconic, and important mementos of Lincoln's life. They're going to sell to the highest bidder to pay the note. $9 million in this state. And I know that we're upside down, but we got a lot of billionaires running for governor. So I reached out to both Rauner and to JB.
Oh, good for you.
And I said, hey, talk about bipartisan. You guys should both just write a check and make this thing go away.
Have you heard back from either office?
No.
Okay. I'll reach out to them. Let's pressure them. I say we pressure them into it. It's chump change for them.
It's time for our recommendation. Steve Bertrand, what are you liking?
I am just a few weeks away from going to Norway.
Ooh. Yeah.
Very excited about that. And there's a series.
That's your recommendation? Go to Norway?
Go to Norway. There's a series on Netflix called Occupied. It's actually two seasons in now, but it's about how Norway, which is not in the EU, is oil rich in all of this. And this prime minister comes in and he's an environmentalist and he hates that the oil is being used. And also he comes up with an alternative energy source. Well, the Europeans hate that. And even more, the Russians hate that. So the Europeans sort of endorse the Russians just coming in with a velvet sort of not revolution, but invasion and taking over Norway. And so it's this series where the Norwegians, you follow the prime minister and all, are trying to run their country. No one wants to say it, but in fact, it's the Russians who are running the country.
Hmm.
It's a great political thriller. It's called Occupied, and it's on Netflix.
By the way, nobody travels to Northern Europe, England, and Ireland better than Steve Bertrand. If I did want to travel
to
Norway,
I want to come.
Yeah.
How would I do that, Steve?
Well, these trips are filled, but we're taking a couple of groups at SteveBertrandTravel.com.
Yeah, so go to SteveBertrandTravel.com.
I do have, since you asked, a very lovely WGN trip going to Ireland in October to see a Van Morrison concert.
Hey!
Isn't that in Ireland?
I would love to be
go
able to
see
my
Van Morrison
it's
sing.
It's a 350-seat hotel ballroom in Belfast.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
But we should do a remote from there.
Yes, please.
What do you like, Patty?
Well, first, let me say that I am headlining Nerdfest at Stage 773 this Saturday night at 10 p.m.
Seriously?
Yeah, and you can go to stage773.com, which leads me to my recommendation, because I am a nerd, by way of being a dork, actually. But it's true. There's a distinction. There's a series on YouTube that I've not only watched every single episode, I'm going back and watching them again. I cannot believe how much I enjoy it, which is it's called Cobra Kai. Picks up 34 years after Karate Kid, and they start out with that moment where Danny LaRusso does the crane kick, but it picks up from through the eyes of Johnny Lawrence, who was the bully, the protagonist and there's so much culturally relevant in this series, you would be surprised. But basically, Johnny Lawrence opens up a dojo and he is a sensei for all the outcasts, all the nerds, all the dorks, all the freaks like Danny, but in a way that is like the kind of tough love. And you know, when he named calls, he gender bias things, and he goes, look, you know, when they complain, he goes, look, you can't expect people to do the right thing. Get over it. Basically calling them snowflakes and not trying to toughen them up. And it's an interesting kind of perspective. And Danny LaRusso's a little bit flawed, but still adorable.
Name of the show and the network?
Cobra Kai on YouTube.
How about you, Scott Stannis?
On Netflix, and this is a very old, but they just recently put it on Netflix, but it's delightful for reasons that Patty and I have talked about a lot. It's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. It's with Jerry Seinfeld. And there are some shows, a lot of the shows now that we're near the end watching, a lot of the shows are just banter and, you know.
Sure.
And some of the comedians just aren't very funny or very talkative, which mm-hmm. is weird.
Oh, but, no. Comics can be introverts.
But then
why go
on the show if you're not going to open, if you're not going to give?
There's a couple of them who just did not talk. But what the shows I find fascinating, there's probably, I would say, half a dozen of them. It talks about process. And that's the issue about these people who I just think is fascinating, about comedians, about comic strip artists, about anyone who creates. What's your process? How do you do this? And I'd say maybe about, like I said, half a dozen. He goes into their writing processes. When do they do it? How do they do it? And the most telling moment was he had Steve Martin on.
Oh,
And Seinfeld said something funny, and Martin kind of laughs, and he thinks, isn't it funnier if you... Steve Martin is 70 years old when this is shot, and
sure.
he's still thinking like a comedian. It's funnier if you transpose these words and introduce this, and changing and massaging the gag and making it funnier. I mean, I love that stuff. So it's really delightful. And plus, Seinfeld's an engaging, funny guy.
Well, and he's legendary in his process because he was very strict about his schedule. He would, every day at the exact same time, like you have a job, he would make sure he spent time writing every single day at the same time. And comics talk about that all the time because we're all different. And on the other hand, like Jay Leno would say, he never wrote down a joke because if it wasn't funny enough to remember, it wasn't funny enough to do.
It's funny because in the new David Letterman special. In the new David Letterman special, he talks to Tina Fey here in Chicago, and they talk about process a little bit on Saturday Night Live when she was writing there, and how there would be a joke that they wanted to do making fun of Mitt Romney's sons. And they had a long, protracted conversation about it's mean, it's kind of funny, is it worth it, is it fair? And, you know, all of these sort of different measurements that they brought into the equation and finally decided not to do the Mitt Romney joke. A Trump Jr. joke works now because they've inserted themselves into the national dialogue. The Romney kids hadn't. It just reminds me a little bit about how you do what you do and...
Well, as long as we're talking about that interview, I thought it was interesting that when they talked about the fact that he had only two women writers over a pretty long span of time, he said that he didn't think that they wanted to write for his little show when it was on the after Johnny Carson, and she's like, "Well, we did," and he said, "Well, it was an oversight, or I didn't know," and David Letterman was a gatekeeper, and so were his talent bookers.
And she let him totally skate in that moment.
Don't forget the scandal he had. Refurbished the Sullivan Theater, he had a bedroom put above,
yeah,
and it wasn't because he wanted to nap.
It makes me angry to no end because you know, over 2 years he had about 22 comics and only two of them were women. I knew both of them, Karen Rontowski and Carmen Lynch. You know, that dictates what comedy clubs will who they'll hire.
Yeah.
So you have trained an entire country of comedy clubs that women aren't as funny. And hire the dudes.
I'm glad you saw that because I watched the thing and it was kind of funny, kind of not. It was the two of them chatting, very comfortable in each other's space, very big fans of each other, and it was funny at times, you know, and they talked about where do you get pizza in Chicago, Malnati's or Gino's, do you go to Buddy Guy's Legends, and they had Buddy Guy come on. It was a Chicago-centric show. It was kind of nice that way, but they got to the moment where Letterman, who sort of feigned being humble, going, well, my little show that would come on late at night.
People would always say to me, I would do an interview, and they would say, well, why don't you have women writers? And the best I could come up with was, I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know why there weren't women writers. I don't know. There was no policy against women writers. And I always thought, well, geez, if I was a woman, I'm not sure I would want to write on my little nickel and dime dog and pony show anyway, because we were on at 12:30.
Yeah, we do want to write on it, though.
Yeah.
And she had this, I call look on her face because it sounded like because I believe it was. And she let him get away with it a little bit. She just kind of snarkily said, oh, they did.
Yeah.
They did want to write for you, Dave. And he goes, well, la, la, la. And I'm like, she could have buried him right there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the time and place. Yeah. The point was made.
I auditioned 8 times for the David Letterman show. And they said, finally, Eddie Brill said, you're just too upbeat. Well, you know, David really likes, you know, more dry, sardonic, you know, more New York type comics. Okay.
And you don't have a penis. Did they say that?
No, he didn't say that. Yeah. He said that one joke you have is hilarious. I have the email.
Hilarious.
He spelled H-I-G-H out. Oh. Hilarious.
Do you remember the joke?
Yeah, it's about how they use goats to control forest fires. I mean, fires in California. And I said, that's a lot of pressure on your goat. It's a very thin line between your goat being a hero and a gyro. Anyway, it's a much longer bit than that. Thank you.
So the recommendation is comedians in cars getting coffee.
By the way, my recommendation, you use the word dork. You said there's a difference between dork and nerd. The most adorkable person on TV of all time is the new girl.
Oh, yes.
Jess, who's Zooey Deschanel,
is
the most adorkable person ever. We were watching the last two episodes of that series because they wrapped it up. One of the guys, Winston, always wears the coolest clothes. And I was just watching it, and he had on this blazer with this kind of clashing but matching shirt underneath. And I thought, oh, that looks so cool. So I Googled Winston's clothes on New Girl. And lo and behold, there's a website called wornontv.net. And you just type in the episode and the show and the character or whatever. It's just like you just click the face of that person.
That's amazing.
And then there's their clothes that they wore in those episodes. And then you click on that outfit and then it takes you to Nordstrom Rack or to H&M or
that's
to
great.
Wherever.
That's so really cool.
Like now all of my face, every time I go on the internet now, I'm getting Winston-style shirts appearing all over my pages. But this is one of those instances where, you know, you plant a cookie and you kind of like it because I like these shirts and I'm going to start buying them.
I love that.
What's the name of the site again?
WornOnTV.net.
Can I tell you something? I know you're wrapping up, but if you're ever in Los Angeles, there's a cool resale shop in the Valley where it's a secondhand store and it's everything from the studios. So they have all the wardrobe. I mean, there are a lot of size zeros, but like Nathan Fillion's coats are there and it's really cool.
Really?
Yeah. And the prices aren't that bad. It's not.
Exactly. I'll bet for the men and the women, but
for everybody,
the men too.
It's so cool because the clothes are small. Some of the clothes
sizes
are small. I actually found a really cool pair of jeans. It was probably worn by an extra or something on a show, but it's really cool to go with. I mean, like I spent hours there.
I will have Elif post that on our notes at the end of the show. As you rehear this, you can look it up on our Facebook page and website and wherever you're listening to this. Thank you, Patty Vasquez.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Scott Stanton.
Thank you.
Steve Bertrand just exited stage left. Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie will join us again another day. I'm John Williams. Ben Cortez normally engineers. He's not in studio today. He's elsewhere. So we say thank you for the engineering and producing to Elif Garris, our producer. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Award-winning podcast.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.